owners of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Hey, welcome to the Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Truth is our bitch. Very happy to be with you tonight. Very sad to hear the news of the passing of Jonathan Winters, who was a obvious founding father of modern comedy, one of three that I consider to be the founding fathers of modern comedy, Lenny Bruce being one, Richard Pryor being another, and Jonathan Winters being the third. I think those are the three fathers of what we call today observational ethnic humor, you know, honest humor. I don't know, whatever you want to call it, you know, just completely insane humor. And Jonathan Winters was, as an improviser, as an improvisational artist, he was probably the best that there's ever been. I mean, just standing on stage by himself. So I got the news today, and it's one of those things where something is super personal to you. For me, Jonathan Winters was, as I've listed my influences, I've never mentioned Jonathan Winters because I found him later on by way of a couple of friends. I was mostly influenced by, as I've mentioned a lot of times, Jackie Gleason was a big influence. Later on was Frank Zappa, Firesign Theater, Laurel and Hardy. Jonathan Winters was a guy that was almost like the cherry on top of the whipped cream. You know, he was like the final garnish of what was a pretty amazing era in comedy. And stand-up comics were leaving the one-liners behind, and they were leaving behind the era of doing just impressions for impressions' sakes, and leaving behind the era of the Henny Youngman stuff, and they were moving into a kind of a dangerous place where they were standing on stage doing a nightclub act, but they were making comments about the world around them in ever more relevant ways. And Lenny Bruce was one, and there are so many others. Mort Saul. Jonathan Winters didn't do any of that, but he sure referenced movies that he'd seen, and he was modern in a different way. He wasn't modern so much, it wasn't so much modern in the material so much as he was modern in his approach, in his execution, in what he did, which was to modernize certain kinds of stereotypical images, like that Maud Frickett character of his. A little old lady was taken by Jonathan Winters, and he didn't mock her being old. He turned her into almost a degenerate. Not a real degenerate, but, you know. So anyway, I don't want to do a big speech here.
Yeah, just let people go listen to Jonathan Winters.
The what?
You should just recommend that people listen to Jonathan Winters, and you can move on.
Well, is it all right if I... God!
No, why can't Phil talk about it?
Well, Phil can talk about it, but I'm worried that you're going to begin to... You're going to say what you said during the... Well...
Yeah, you're going to start talking about how, hey, there's a lot of similarities between me and him.
Wait a minute. I never said anything of the sort.
Well... No, Phil, what you did say was that Jonathan Winters, a lot of the same things have been said about you that were said about him.
No, hold on for a minute.
Yeah, well, oh, he's a genius.
No, I didn't say that. No, that's not, I did not, what I said was, there's only one part of all that early reporting today on Jonathan Winters that I recognized, and that was the following. When they said, we didn't know what to do with him, they didn't know what to do with him. Where do you put Jonathan Winters? He's not a movie star necessarily, he's not a TV star necessarily, he's not a recording artist necessarily. What do you do with him? He's a great guest, but he's not a great host. It was difficult, okay? And I'm just saying, I've heard that before said about what I do.
Well,
yeah, you sort of wanted to say you were a genius.
No, I did not. I'm gonna, you know what, you guys, you wonder what causes problems around here. You guys do.
Oh, I see. We're the cause of the problems, not you. We are.
Yeah, when you guys misinterpret stuff like that.
Biden, who files talking with Phil today? He didn't say nothing about genius.
Well, just so you know, you're not a genius. You're not Jonathan Winters.
Who said that I was? I don't say I'm Jonathan Winters. Never in my life would I ever think I'm Jonathan Winters. Look at the amazing story of that man. Look at the great success he's had. So,
And the fact that you lived near where he lived...
Yeah, that's not anything. What, do you think you're going to get credit for that?
What are you talking about? I never want to take credit for living near where he... I don't even live near where he lives. I live 20 miles away, 30 miles away.
Well, you're closer than a lot of people, and I don't think you should get credit for that.
Why would I get credit for that? Can you imagine that? By the way, I live near 20 miles from Jonathan Winters. Oh, Jesus. Can we interview you, Mr. Hendry?
Well, you think that that's what's going to happen?
No. That's about the dumbest thing I think I've ever heard said, okay?
Well, then don't think it.
I don't think it. I haven't thought it. You guys said it, though.
Well, we're only saying it because we think that that's what you would think.
We said it because you thunk it. I mean, you didn't. Never mind.
Oh, here we go with the never mind. You always say never mind when you butcher something up.
What are you talking about?
Every time you go like right then, you went, we thunk it. Oh, wait, we think it. Oh, never mind.
What?
Hey, bud, what is it with you today? Are you Margaret's best friend today? Is that what's going on? Yesterday you were antagonizing her all over the place. Day before, you're my buddy. What are you sucking up to her for?
I'm not sucking up. Other than the fact, well, I got a job.
What job did he get?
He's driving me to the studio every night.
That's fantastic.
What's so funny about that?
No, it's nothing. I understand now. Of course you gotta echo everything she says.
I'm my own man. I go my own way and plot my own course in life.
Yeah, sure.
And, well...
Yeah, of course you do. And by the way, you're Ms. Gray's driver. Are you kidding me? Why do you need a driver?
Because it's tiring coming all the way up here, Phil. Because I have other things I have to do. I'm doing a lot of reading. I'm on the phone. I need someone to drive me. It's not unusual.
I understand that, but I just... All right, well, that's good, and I hope, don't tell me what she's paying you, because I don't want to know.
Well, I'm going to get $2 an hour.
What?
You're kidding.
What?
You're paying him $2 an hour.
That's good.
He's happy with it.
What?
You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Give him more money than that.
What, can she afford more?
Bud, we'll talk about it later on. Thanks a lot. How dare you... Interfere in my business matters.
$2 an hour. Come on. Jonathan Winters passed on today. He was 87 years of age. He was born in 1925 in Dayton, Ohio. Mr. Winters went on to a brief stint with the United States Marines in World War II. I say brief. It was long enough. He was a gunner on an aircraft carrier, the Bonhomie Richard, an aircraft carrier that later was commanded by Admiral Stephen Morrison, the father of Jim Morrison of The Doors. So that's a ship, and we're talking about the World War II version of the Bonhomie Richard, a ship that had a rather distinguished crew from time to time, although in one instance, much before Jonathan Winters' great career in comedy began, and the other, the father of a young man who went on to become the lead singer of The Doors, Jim Morrison. Jonathan Winters, as I was saying to Dan before the show started, I saw him interviewed, and I believe it was part of the Screen Actors Guild series. You can look these interviews up, folks, online. They've got tons and tons of interviews of the great stars and actors and comics and people who've made their living from time to time in movies. And they're really interesting because they're sitting there and they are talking about their craft in a way that you're never going to hear them do on a talk show. And they have a lot of time to expand on the topic. They have time to discuss how they got into it and so on. And Jonathan Winters, in one of the rare interviews that I've seen of him where he's not doing any kind of shtick at all, he's talking very seriously, and he said that being on an aircraft carrier was like being on a floating gas station because you have nothing but gasoline and explosives on board an aircraft carrier. And that was the biggest sweat for a young man named Jonathan Winters during World War II, was being on an aircraft carrier, knowing that, the wrong day, any bomb that was dropped by a Japanese plane that found the right target on the wrong day, and that was the end of the ship. So he talked a lot about that, and then getting into comedy, he was part of a talent contest. And he wanted to win the talent contest because he wanted to win the first prize, which was a watch. He needed a watch, he said. And he won the talent contest, so his wife encouraged him to continue to explore the world of comedy and doing these things. He also got a job, I think, briefly at a radio station in Dayton, Ohio. He came west, continued to expand his career on stage. And one night in 1959 at the Hungry Eye in San Francisco, I don't even know if the Hungry Eye is still there or not. Margaret, do you?
I don't know. I think it's been started and restarted a couple of times. But it's in North Beach.
Yeah, the Hungry Eye in San Francisco, he had some kind of a nervous breakdown that I heard about as a kid at odd times, and it always had some different, he climbed a flagpole, he refused to come out of a bathroom, I don't know what happened, but he was eventually hospitalized, And it turned out that he was what they called in those days manic depressive. Today we call it bipolar. And I can imagine a guy having a breakdown. If you're bipolar, you're going from these heights and these moods of great elation all the way to the rock bottom pits of depression. That's probably something that will cause anybody to just momentarily lose it. Anyway, he was hospitalized. He gets out of the hospital, and very shortly thereafter, he gets a call from Stanley Kramer offering him a part in a movie called It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. And he didn't want to take it. And his wife said to him, if you don't take this part, you will never work again in the entertainment business. You have to take this part. And he did. And if you've seen the movie, he plays this mechanic who winds up destroying an entire gas station, and he's hysterically funny. The movie I liked him in more was a movie called The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming, where he plays like a sheriff, or he's some deputy sheriff out on Long Island when the Russians, by mistake, run a submarine aground. Anyway, Jonathan Winters, and he's gone now. And, you know, I mean, that's life. And like I was saying, you know, it's funny how you don't think of people as being old because you don't want them to go. And I think that was the case with Jonathan Winters. For me, it was just, I always knew that he was, as long as he's alive, you know, I don't care if he's not doing anything. I just like the fact that I know that he's alive. And when he passed on, it was definitely the passing of a genius and the passing of an era in comedy that every single person who does comedy today, every single human being, man or woman, that does humor today owes a debt of gratitude to Jonathan Winters. I don't care who they are. I don't care what they think they do. They owe a debt to Jonathan Winters.
What about you?
No, I don't. I'm the only one. I'm kidding. Of course I do.
Well, yes, absolutely you do. And I think that you owe a larger debt to Jonathan Winters because you don't really mention him as an influence, and I think you're lying.
You know what, Margaret? I mean, that's about as cruel.
I'm joking.
Yeah, she's being Jonathan Winters.
Oh, ha, 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 ha.
Well, that was a real sarcastic ha, ha, ha. I'm joking.
In any event, Godspeed, God bless you, rest in peace, Jonathan Winters. We're going to come back with all kinds of news here tonight on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. A North Korean spy says Kim Jong-un is struggling to control the military. Kid Rock is embarrassed to be a Republican. How about them apples? And Matt Damon is selling his $20 million mansion in Miami. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch.
About it.
The Phil
I'm
Hendry
give
Show.
Give it a rest.
Bill Hendry Show.
Doug, look it up.
I'm looking it up, okay? Take it easy, man. Hey, guys, welcome back to World Famous Phil Hendry Show. So I decided I would go on what's this called?
It's iTunes.
iTunes, and look up Jonathan Winters to see what they're carrying in terms of comedy. Now, so far, you know, I have not completed my search. I am on their comedy, in their comedy section. I've even found my way to something called 60s and 70s comedy, which I would imagine I would find Jonathan Winters in, because I'm looking at 20th Century Masters Bill Cosby. But right now, man, I ain't seeing no Winters. Let me see. Let's see if I find it.
Well, you would think there'd be Jonathan Winters.
You would think. But I got news for you. Why are you not refreshing here, iTunes? I'm just going to tell you something, iTunes. You're featuring here on your feature page, and this is just for your edification, but it shows the glaring weakness, and I think it shows your inability in the truest sense to connect to culture, because while you guys may be all about technology, and I, you know, think it's fantastic, Apple, all that great stuff, when it comes to actually knowing what's going on in the world, on a day when Jonathan Winters dies, you would think you'd be featuring, because I'm looking at Lily Tomlin, I'm looking at Bill Cosby, I'm looking at George Carlin, I'm looking at Steve Martin, I'm looking at Red Fox. You know, I mean, I said Red Fox, and he's funny, but where's Jonathan Winters? The guy died today.
Well, I don't think you can expect them. What are you...
I'm expecting them to be featuring, if they're going to put albums, which is what they're doing here on this particular page, Monty Python, In Living Color, no Jonathan Winters. All right, because at some point in the show, I want to play a little. I want to do something. You know, I don't, I want to do something, even if it has nothing to do with Jonathan Winters. I want to do something. All right.
What are you talking about?
I'm just screwing around. Take it easy. Anyway, welcome back to the program. A former North Korean spy who bombed a South Korean airliner said on Wednesday that the North's leader, Kim Jong-un, is struggling to control his military and using war talk to shore up support. That's what I thought he was doing.
No, you didn't. You said that.
Yes, I did. I told you.
Yeah, you said so in the beginning of the show, but you didn't say it. I mean, you said it. You said it on the pre-show. You didn't say it on the show.
I said it on the pre-show. I said, yeah, I thought this guy was talking tough so he could, to the military would start loving him. We got to get General Galen Shaw in here, man, to talk about this, because this is a military thing, and that's the only guy that I know. He's the only guy that's been on this show that has any military chops other than Lloyd Bonafide, and that guy is half out of his mind. A former North Korean spy who bombed a South Korean airliner. Was that the same one that... No, that was an American airliner that got blown up.
That was the one they shot out of the sky. That was terribly tragic. Terribly tragic.
What, do you think it was tragic, or you just...
Why wouldn't I think it's tragic?
Because you're going... Kim Jong-hee...
Let me see that.
Give me that back.
That doesn't sound like a real name.
It is a real name. Give me that. Kim Jong-hee, who said she was ordered by Jong-un's father, Kim Jong-il, to bomb the airliner in 1987, killing 115 people, said she believes the son is still trying to establish himself following his father's death. In December 2011, Kim Jong-un is too young and too inexperienced, she told Australia ABC Television in an exclusive interview. ABC means the Australian Broadcasting Company, bud, because I can see the look on your face. You're all like, what?
Yeah, I didn't get it.
Well, now you know, Australian. They allowed to do that?
I think they've got to pay a royalty, don't they?
To who?
To ABC, the American company.
Why?
Why?
Yeah, because there's an ABC already.
Maybe these guys started before they did. You ever thought about that?
Well, it's America.
Doesn't mean America because it's... Anyway...
I'm just thinking, yes, because it is America, that we've got dibs.
We got dibs.
Well...
Yeah, don't say anything. Anyway, Kim Jong-un...
Let me see that. You jackass, it's Kim...
Give me that back. What are you guys grabbing copy out of my hand for, okay?
I might as well do it. Let me see.
Give me that.
Here, I got it. Throw it over here.
I'm going to start kicking. Give me that.
Okay, so he is okay. We've been leading up to this, Phil, because someone said that you had a bad shoulder.
Yes, I said I had a bad shoulder.
Not in that little game of keep away that we just orchestrated, which you fell right into. Good job, boys.
Thanks a lot, Ms. Gray.
Oh, so you guys grabbed the news copy away from me, started throwing it, see how I got a bad shoulder?
Exactly.
Well, it hurt like hell while I was trying to get those...
So you do not have a bad shoulder, so you can play in the third annual Ted's of Beverly Hills softball game on Saturday. Get Ted on the phone.
Now, wait a second. No, I cannot play in that game. I got other stuff I got to do. Wait a minute.
Get Mr. Bell on the phone.
Get right away.
Wait a second. Who's running the show, me or you?
Hold on, bud. Now what do you want?
I told Ted I can't play in that softball game because I am busy. I am busy. I'm busy with work. I'm busy writing some things. We're going to do a couple of, you know, it's nobody's business what I'm doing, but I'm writing some stuff. We're going to be presenting some stuff over the next few months, and I got to get my act together and do some writing this weekend, okay? And that's why I...
That's why you told Ted you had a damn tongue.
I do have a bad shoulder. It does hurt.
Just doesn't hurt right now.
You know,
It just doesn't hurt right now.
It hurts right now, yes. It actually does hurt because right when you guys were making me play keep away, I noticed that I felt,
Just let me ask you, does this hurt?
Ow, yes, that hurt, bud. God, man.
Look at that. Well, look at that, man. Got on brass knuckles.
Give me those brass knuckles. What the hell are you doing, man?
I want to see if it hurt.
Yes, it hurt. Now look at this, man. Now here we go. We got another break. You calling up Ted?
Yeah.
We'll be back to Kim Jong-un and Kim Jong-il and the rest of these guys. I'm going to have to get new copy because you ripped it in half.
Yes, but we did it to prove a point.
Be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. That hurt, man.
Yes, it did.
No, it didn't.
Yes, it did.
Didn't.
Phil Henry.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We're going to get Ted Bell on here in just a second. A reminder that our website, philhenryshow.com, has plenty of backstage passes left. In fact, we never run out of them, really. The backstage pass is an all-access pass to our website. Now, unlike a lot of radio websites where they're, you know, hey, here are the pictures from the contest we had this morning, and they're fine. We actually have real radio content on our site. We not only have real radio content, we have full shows. And we do not just have full shows. We have full shows that go back over a decade, 5,000 hours and counting, along with a video archive, along with the full year of KFI Saturday night shows we did here in Los Angeles, along with a bunch of miscellaneous video casts, interviews we've done for radio and television, TV pilots that we've done. We also have webisodes created by Stephen White, animated webisodes. We have an archive of the much talked about, rarely understood, very, very weird Milwaukee Lions broadcasts from the entire first season, all 16 games. Actually, all 15 games, right?
Yeah, didn't have no 16 game.
Didn't have a 16 game at forfeit.
They forfeited the last game of the season, the Lions did, to the Tampa Bay Gator, or the Tampa Gator Bait. I shouldn't say Tampa Bay because they don't want to have anything to do with the Buccaneers.
Who were the Buccaneers?
They stink.
Yeah, I don't get it about Tampa. I remember when they really were just jonesing for a football team. They get one, and they have a few bad years, and now they couldn't care less whether they lived or died. So the only team they got down there, they won the Eastern Division of the Phil Henry Football League, otherwise known as Dickman America, by, I don't know what their record. What was their record?
I think that was about 10-6.
Yeah, the Tampa Gator Bait finished 10-6. Anyway, make a long story short, the Milwaukee Lions, who didn't make the playoffs, they are the second worst team in the league. We've got all of the play-by-play, but the most important thing to remember is Jack I. Gagner doing the play-by-play. That guy's been fired by more teams. He has been fined by the FCC more times. He has been arrested more times. He's done more jail time. He has been in and out of rehab. In other words, he's fantastic. Jack I. Gagner, along with former Milwaukee Lion quarterback Brett Morrison, calling all the play-by-play from the 2012 season. So check it out at philhenryshow.com with a backstage pass. Here we go, man.
Ted of Beverly Hills. Steakhouse, come on down.
Everybody, come on down to Ted of Beverly Hills. We have a big announcement I'm going to make here in just a couple of minutes on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, but also, of course, a reminder that every day at Ted of Beverly Hills is a meet day.
Here at Ted's.
Meet and greet.
We want to put our meat in your mouth.
That's right. Once you meet and greet, then you want to put the meat in your mouth. We have a Kansas City steak, Phil. I got one. It's got your name on it.
I know that, and I want to get in there. I've, between doing the radio show and so many other things, but I got to get in there because I'm missing my Ted's of Beverly Hills after show dinner.
Which is, you like the porterhouse. This Kansas City that we've got, I am telling you, it's got your name on it. It literally does have your name on it. I wrote your name on it, and we put it on a little stick. You know the little sticks you used to get that says rare, medium rare, all that stuff?
Yeah.
We still use those at Ted's of Beverly Hills. We want all the parents out there to bring your kids in because the kids love it when they get their steak and it's got the little thing, the sign in it that says rare, medium rare. And we're thinking about doing that with the drinks for the kids. You know how kids love to have the Shirley Temple and the Roy Rogers, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to bring the drinks, and I've got a little tiny boat that I'm going to put in it with a sign that says Shirley Temple. And there'll be a little girl in the boat, and she'll look like she's shipwrecked or something. I don't know what the... We'll get the doll. And then we'll have a sign of a cowboy, and it says Roy Rogers, and he's in a boat. And to explain why a cowboy would be in a boat, we have, I don't think this is a good idea, but Jerry Reynolds, who does our marketing, thought we'd have a horse that's floating in the drink. And I thought it was a bad joke, don't you?
Yeah, for kids, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Jerry, is Jerry here? Yeah, I thought it was a bad joke. Do you think he's making a monkey out of me?
Who?
Jerry Reynolds.
No, I don't think. Well, I mean, that's an unusual suggestion.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I thought. And I talked to Marcy about it when I got home. I went home for lunch today. I said, do you think this guy's chumping me? And she said, what? I said, he wants me to have a little boat with a Roy Rogers doll in it that we put in the top of the little boy's drinks, the Roy Rogers drink, and he's a cowboy. And Marcy said, oh, a cowboy in a boat. And that got me to thinking, boy, that is kind of stupid. How do we explain why the cowboy's in a boat? Well, maybe the horse is dead. And I know that's a bad thing, but what?
Well, he left the horse on land.
He left the horse on... What is he doing in a boat, though? You got to explain why he's in the boat.
How do you know why he's in the boat? Even if you have a dead floating horse, which is nothing you want to put into a child's drink.
No, no, I know that now. But...
Why is Roy Rogers in the boat?
Because the horse is dead.
No, but why is Roy... What if his horse was alive?
Then he'd be on the horse.
What if he had a large body of water to cross?
He would be on the horse. Haven't you ever seen the westerns? I'm sure you have.
Where they're riding the horse through... Yeah, through a river.
All right, well, that's what it is.
It's a river.
Yes. That's the way you explain it. But if he's in a boat on a river, he looks like the biggest puss. Excuse my French, but you don't want Roy Rogers. In other words, Phil, any cowboy that is in a boat on a river, he looks like some punk. He looks like a punk. You got all the other cowboys that are going across the river on the horse. I realize I'm getting into a big thing and I probably shouldn't have, you know.
Well, it is a little much to be worried about.
But hold on. Because I'm talking about the families that come in on Sundays. You got to make these kids happy that they'll never come back. They will never want to. They won't have anything to do with you. They'll stay away from you like you have AIDS, okay? So I've got to make these families happy. And the way to do it is to keep the kids happy. But I got to explain this logically. You're going to have some kid coming up to me and saying, why is Roy Rogers in the boat? You know, because my son's that way. You know, Josh, he loves to ask all those goofy questions. So, you know, I'm trying to answer the question. I would think that what Roy Rogers is doing is he's trying to go across the river. He was going to take his horse. He was going to ford the river like they do in the westerns.
Okay.
And instead what happened, the horse died and he had to get a boat.
Well, I it's a very strange way to have to explain something. I don't think you should do it. If Jerry Reynolds...
Hold on for a minute. What? Is Jerry on the phone? Tell him I want to see him. I want Jerry Reynolds here now. You understand that? I don't care what he's doing. Hey, how you doing? Good evening. Good evening. Right over here. We're starting to fill up a little bit here, Phil, but I wanted to mention that. And then I also wanted to... Margaret called me. You are supposed to be out there playing ball with us tomorrow. You know that, right?
Yeah, Ted, I told you...
You told me you had a bad arm, and Margaret just said that they played keep away with some news copy, and you were jumping up like you were, you know, you were going to the fifth floor like Jerry West or something. You know, like you were what's the guy, Dwight Yoakam? Who's the high jumper, Dwight Yoakam?
Dwight Yoakam, Dwight Stone?
Is that the guy? Who's Dwight Yoakam?
He's a country singer.
Oh, okay. They said you were high jumping for that news copy like you were Dwight Yoakam.
Dwight Stone is the high jumper.
Yeah, but they said you were doing it like Dwight Yoakam.
Is that good or bad?
I guess it's good. Margaret?
Yes, Ted.
Well, who's Dwight Yoakam?
Dwight Yoakam is a country singer, but my understanding is he's a very good high jumper.
Will you get out of here with Dwight Yoakam? The fact is, you know, the fact is, Ted, that I have a lot that I've got to do this weekend.
Yeah, Mr. Barrel, he's pumped. He doesn't want to be on the team.
Phil, I'm counting on you. You said you were going to be on the team, remember?
No, I did not say I was going to be on the team. And why do you need me, man? I'm not a great ball player.
Well, we need your size. We need a big guy. I want somebody big batting cleanup. I want to scare this guy. You know who we're playing, don't you?
No, I don't.
Didn't you tell him, Margaret?
No, I didn't want to tell him. I wanted you to tell him.
We're playing Hong Kong, Charlie.
The Chinese place.
Yeah, the Chinese. Oh, look at you. He throws it off like it's no big deal, the Chinese place. It's the Prince of Darkness. That's what it is. Hong Kong Charlie's is hell, is hell on earth. It represents every kind of hell to Ted Bell. Ted Bell, Hong Kong Charlie's, hell. Hong Kong Charlie's, no here, no hell. Ted Bell, happy. okay?
He's even got you speaking like a guy who speaks Chinese and English is a second language.
Look, you know, I don't know what you just said there. I guess you thought it was funny, but I didn't understand it. The point I'm trying to make...
Well, the point that you're trying to make here is that Hong Kong Charlie is your softball opponent tomorrow, and you need me in the lineup, but you want me to bat cleanup because I'm big or whatever. I haven't played baseball in a long time, man.
You haven't played basement?
Baseball.
Yeah, I noticed that, Teddy said. I haven't played baseball.
Yeah, you know what, Phil? Quit putting so much energy into saying no, and put a little bit of energy into saying yes.
I got a busy weekend coming up. I can't play. I'm sorry. I wish I could.
All right, how about doing a play-by-play, doing a Philcast of it? I know you don't want to do the TV. How about a radio cast or a podcast of the Dead of Beverly Hills versus Hong Kong Charlie?
What are you talking about?
Am I speaking Chinese? Just because I'm playing Hong Kong Charlie doesn't mean I'm speaking his language yet. That'll happen after they beat us when you don't play. Because if you don't play and Hong Kong Charlie beats us, I'm going to be speaking Chinese this time tomorrow night.
That's perfect. That's perfect.
What are you laughing about? Serious.
Phil, I don't know why you're laughing.
Are you kidding me? Did you hear what he just said?
Yeah, I said this time tomorrow night he's speaking Chinese.
This time tomorrow night he's going to be speaking Chinese, yeah.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
What am I going to do about what? He's playing a softball game against Hong Kong Charlie, okay? Ted, is this the fourth game or the third?
It's the fourth.
This is the fourth annual Ted's of Beverly Hills Softball Classic. Every year he wins. He beat Maestro's Steakhouse the first year. He beat BJ's Rib Shack the second year, whatever the hell that place was. Last year he beat some other place, the Cigar Room or something. This year he's taking on Hong Kong Charlie, and he'll probably beat him.
Well, Ted's worried because Hong Kong Charlie is it's an X factor. It's a Chinese place.
So? What was the cigar room?
Well, they serve meat.
Yeah, they serve pork. They serve a chop. They do chops.
They do a variety of lamb chop.
The what? The cigar place? I thought it was just a cigar room.
No, they also do chops. They do chops and steaks. Chops, steaks, filet. Do you understand? Finally.
Morgan, what are you getting pissed off about?
He's sticking me in the middle of this. Do you understand?
Gotta get out and gotta play. Otherwise, Ted's gonna... I don't know.
Well, what happens if I don't play? Is he gonna have a panic attack or something?
He's gonna get beat by Hong Kong Charlie. He's gonna have Hong Kong Charlie coming in every single night reminding him. And Ted is afraid that he's gonna do something that he will regret for the rest of his life. What is funny about that? Get Ted back on the phone. He just called up. I don't know what frame of mind he's in.
You know, you ought to spend less time worrying about Ted Bell. That guy's got nothing but money. Nothing but money.
He's a friend of mine, and I thought he was a friend of yours.
He is a friend of mine. And I would be there for him for something important. A softball game? Especially with the work that I have to do? I don't have it the way Ted's got it, okay? Hey, you know what? My hat's off to the guy. He's done a lot with his career. He's done a lot with that restaurant. I got to take a break, okay?
You're always taking a break, and that's another way of saying I have to avoid what you're saying.
No, this is another way of saying let's go to a break, and we'll talk about it when we come back from the break.
That's another way of saying we got sponsors we got to get to. Oh, wait a minute. No, we don't.
Just shut up. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll talk about Ted. Get him back on the phone, will you?
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, Ted.
The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
On the Phil TV screen is a picture of a man by the name of Admiral George Stephen Morrison. And Admiral George Stephen Morrison, I'm afraid I misled people when I would talk about Admiral George Stephen Morrison, but not too much. You see a picture of this man. He passed on in 2008. He was a World War II veteran. He was a Navy aviator. He later became the captain of the Bonhomme Richard in 1963. This was years after Jonathan Winters was a Marine gunner on the Bonhomme Richard. Nonetheless, those two men did serve on the same ship. Admiral Morrison was the skipper on the Bonhomme Richard during the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which triggered the United States becoming ever more increasingly involved in Vietnam. He also has one other distinguishment, I think, a lot of people might think. He was the father of Jim Morrison, the lead singer of The Doors. And I always thought it was one of those curiosities and ironies of life that the father of Jim Morrison was also the commander of the ship that Jonathan Winters served on. But he was not Jonathan Winters' superior officer. In fact, he probably was about the same age as Jonathan Winters and, in fact, served on the ship years later. In World War II, when Winters was on the Bonhomie Richard, Admiral Morrison, I should say, was on was a Navy aviator flying flying for the Navy off of the decks of carriers going up against the Japanese. But that's Admiral George Stephen Morrison, and along with Jim Morrison, along with Jonathan Winters, one of many who served proudly aboard that aircraft carrier, the Bonhomie Richard. His son, Jim Morrison, dying in 1971 in Paris. And there's a whole story there. To me, it's one of those amazing tales that you got to take a whole long time trying to figure it out, you know.
Well, what's to figure out? He was the father of Jim Morrison.
Yeah, what do you got to figure out?
I'm talking about there's a sort of a dark poetry to all of this. Do you understand? Just to contemplate all of the stuff that's going on there. You got Jim Morrison, you got Admiral Morrison, you got Jonathan Winters, you got this ship, you got World War II. To me, there's a sort of a dark poetry. There's a kind of, there's some sort of a synchronicity going on there, but I want to figure out what that is. And so it takes time to think about it, Margaret, to put it the way you would.
Well, when you say synchronicity, all right, now you're starting to talk my language. When you start going on, Phil, about Jim Morrison, it was The Doors, I think you're just being a silly little fan. But now when you say synchronicity, all right, you and I are now on an even, now we're level as intellectuals. Now I, you know.
What does synchronicity mean?
Oh, God.
What's wrong?
I was beginning to warm to the topic, and then I realized where I was. What broke me out of my reverie was that.
Well, what is it?
Synchronicity is a word that means things line up, events, people, moments. They line up and they suddenly make sense for a very, perhaps, brief time, and then they sort of go their separate ways. It's a word that was used in the early psychoanalysis and is still used in psychology and psychoanalysis. When we talk about synchronicity, we talk about events having meaning, maybe just for that one person. For instance, Bud, weren't you telling me that you went by a tree with a hole in it the other day, and that reminded you of your accident, and you were going too fast?
Yeah, I was going fast on my motorcycle.
Exactly. And it was almost like a synchronistic that you would see this tree with a hole in it reminding you of this accident, and you're traveling at an excessive rate of speed. You sort of slowed down. That was a moment of synchronicity. That tree, had you not seen it, maybe you would have continued driving fast, and maybe you would have gotten in another accident.
Yeah, but that was God. God told me.
Yeah, man, that's probably God talking.
Yeah, okay, fine, you know.
Well, Phil, don't be an atheist about it.
I'm not an atheist. I'm just saying that's a kind of a synchronistic thing. All right, it's God, you know, maybe God's synchronicity. I don't know. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking here. We're going to get him back on the line here on the Phil Martin Show. Will you turn that down, bud? It distorted, man.
Sorry.
What are you doing?
Ted,
what are you doing?
Of Beverly Hills.
I was going to start talking about
Steakhouse.
Something.
Come on,
Ted. Ted Bell here at Ted's in Beverly Hills. I have been talked into coming back on the air even after I was stunned, almost like a beef, a side of beef going, oh, forget it. What's with you, kid?
What do you want to say?
I wanted to say that what you said to me, not wanting to play on my softball team this weekend, you know, I might as well have been a steer going down the ramp, Phil, and you're standing there waiting to stun me with an axe. That's how I felt. That's how I felt.
Ted, your drama is almost comic.
Oh, is it really? Let me explain something to you, Phil.
You know, Ted, I've been trying...
Hold on, Margaret. I don't mean to interrupt you. Let me explain something to you, Phil. I asked you to be on that softball team. I thought you said you were going to play softball.
If I wasn't busy.
No. I don't remember anything about if I wasn't busy.
If I wasn't busy, I would play softball.
All right. So if you weren't busy, you were going to play softball. Tomorrow, we're playing Hong Kong Charlie. Okay? Do I have to say more?
I understand that Hong Kong Charlie's significant. I don't know what the problem is.
He's the only guy, it's the only joint in Beverly Hills we haven't beat. We've beaten Maestro's Steakhouse. Do you understand what it took to beat those guys? Maestro Steakhouse, those guys were going to steal me of every celebrity customer I ever had. Well, we beat back the challenge. Then comes that BJ rib joint. Then comes that cigar room. Well, they're starting to serve chops and steaks and all that stuff. Now comes Hong Kong Charlie. This is dangerous because this guy serves Chinese food, all right? I can't compete with that. As you well know, Chinese food is the favorite food of every cheap creep that... Oh.
Well, that's a great way to talk about your customers.
I'm not talking about my customers. I'm talking about the cheap creeps.
Well, then what are you worried about?
Because if there's more of them than there are of my customers, I'm in big trouble. Now, I got to beat Hong Kong Charlie so he doesn't keep coming into my restaurant, because I know what he's going to do. He's done it to other guys. He walks in and goes, hey, Ted Bell, you know, you do that Chinese accent better than I do, Bill. You know, can you imagine this guy's going to come into my restaurant and, hey, Ted Bell, Hong Kong Charlie is open, and Hong Kong, you know.
All right, hold on, and we'll be right back.
Well, how long do you expect me to hold on? I just was holding on. What if I had to take a leak, and you're telling me to hold on?
All right, we'll be right back with Ted Bell and others. We've got other news to report on. I can't keep going on this softball game.
Why don't you just, again, Phil, it's like, clear your throat, get a drink of water.
We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show. Don't go away. Don't go away.
Or you can go away if you want.
Well, technically, yes, you can go away if you want. But I can't keep you there.
But don't go away.
Yeah, our choice would be that you not go away.
Phil Henry.
I think we've made it clear.